It is Thursday afternoon when KRVS presents From the Poet's Bookshelf with Louisiana poet Darryl Bork, reading works by writers from or inspired by Louisiana.
To Everyone Who Has Died Since I Was Born, a poem by David Kirby from a recent release by LSU Press entitled The Biscuit Joint. To everyone who has died since I was born, there are so many of you. Thanks for coming by. No telling what the neighbors will say, not to mention the people in Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi whose front yards you've also filled, or the people in the whole world, really. How many of you are there? After all, you started dying when I started breathing, one by one in your beds, and then more quickly in wars, as well as mass famines, deliberate or otherwise. Speaking of which, Hitler and Stalin died too, though I don't exactly see them walking around among you and shaking hands. Why not, though? What are you going to do, kill them again? Anyway, how many? Wait, I can look it up in another window where I see the best estimate is 4 billion, which sounds a little too good to be true. Just as they say that Mount Everest is exactly 23,000 feet high, whereas it's reported as 23,002 in the reference book, so the real height won't sound like a guess. When Walt Whitman was between 31 and 33, as he says in A Backward Glance or Traveled Roads, a desire that had been flitting through his life or hovering on the flanks had steadily advanced to the front and finally dominated everything. And this was his wish to express in poetic form his own physical, emotional, moral, intellectual, and aesthetic personality, while also tallying, and this is the money part, the momentous spirit and facts of its immediate days, and to exploit that personality identified with place and date in a far more candid and comprehensive sense than any hitherto poem or book. Emphasis mine. Anyway, Whitman did it, and I'm trying with the help of so many others, Dante, for example, and Shakespeare, John Donne, of course, Emily Dickinson. Anyway, I owe you people. I started having my fun about the time yours ended. Not that it's all been draft beer and hot fudge Sundays. I've worked hard, though most of you wouldn't call what I do work. And I've written some halfway decent poems, though none like the ones by my masters. And here I have to say that the great majority are lucky. You missed out on the internet with its postings of whatever anybody feels like saying, and worse, what anybody else feels like saying back, which in my case would mean jackasses who haven't done a damn thing with their lives crawling all over me for comparing myself, which I am not doing, to those whom Keats called the mighty dead. And though poetry doesn't mean anything to most of you, a lot of you are in the poems I wrote earlier, and you're all in this one. Come in, Grandma. You can sit next to Federico Garcia Lorca.
Join KRVS each Thursday afternoon for From the Poet's Bookshelf with Louisiana poet Darryl Bork. And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Mariusz Smoly, conductor and artistic director of the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra. Here with some slightly disappointing news for those of you who still wanted tickets for the Heartstrings concert, which is tomorrow evening. But fabulous news for the symphony. You all sold out. You actually have oversold the concert. And it's a constant reminder. I'm sure you have to constantly remind people it's a great idea to buy your tickets early. Isn't it?
Right, yeah. Thank you again for having me in your studio and giving me opportunity to talk about our musical endeavors. And truly, this is the best news you can receive in our line of work, that there's more demand for the seats for our musical products that we are able to provide. It's a sign of appreciation for what we do. And we have seen over the last months and years, steady growth of audience for particular concerts. But the response to this idea, this project, was sort of overwhelming. We are sold out for quite a while. We kept it low when we're checking with our subscribers. Perhaps some of them are not coming and we can resell their tickets. But we sold 100 tickets more than officially the hall allows. But we were given permission to put some extra seats on the stage behind the orchestra, which I think would be quite an interesting point of view to the musical production. So we are all very happy and excited and ready for wonderful music making tomorrow.
Well, just to make that point further about how wonderful your endeavors are, and to make those people who didn't get their tickets in time a little more conscious about buying tickets early, describe the music and what's going to be happening tomorrow evening.
Well, my concept was to provide a music that it's appropriate for the occasion, which is the Valentine's Day.
Yes.
But without making it a little bit too cheap. You know, I didn't want to just play a bunch of love songs or little romantic tiny pieces for the occasion. There's some of that. I wanted to compose a program that provides classy, semi-nostalgic romantic entertainment with a sense of humor and some funny moments too. So the audience will experience music from Baroque to contemporary. We're going to start with a Baroque concerto by Antonio Vivaldi for two cellos and orchestras, and the soloists will be members of our orchestra. I'm always very happy to feature our own players in the solo parts. On the other end of the musical spectrum of styles, we will perform three ragtimes by contemporary American composer William Bolcom, who is Pulitzer Prize-winning, wonderful composer of all kinds of music, from little songs and piano miniatures to operas. And he's one of the masters, in my mind, of mixing the traditional style with other styles, such as jazz or folk. So those three ragtimes are very cleverly written, and they actually tell a little story about ghosts. So we're going to have that opposite Vivaldi. And in the middle, kind of sandwich between those two very contrasting styles, we have little compositions by Tchaikovsky, by Grieg, little piece called Erotic, and music by Puccini. So a little bit of everything, I may say, and I think quite appropriate for the occasion again.
Hmm. But that is sold out, so you can perhaps think about instead getting tickets as a Valentine's gift for the next concert that you all have coming up, which will take place in mid-March, which is not too far away.
This is a brilliant idea. And we have a really one-of-a-kind production, something I dreamed about doing for many years. There is this one-of-a-kind special symphony that late romantic German-Austrian composer Gustav Mahler wrote. He wrote a total of 9 symphonies, but symphony number 2 has a very special place in the music literature of all times. It is so-called Resurrection Symphony, and it talks about a spiritual journey of a human being from despair, doubt, darkness into hope, and promise of something better, both in the current life and perhaps in afterlife. The composer Gustav Mahler is intensely complex person. Genius in terms of music, not only composer but also a poet, great conductor, and somebody always deeply concerned with the affairs of human mind and soul and heart. always searching to answers about questions like, why are we here? What are we doing here? What is happening after we leave? How can I influence my own destiny? Or is everything I'm doing in my life predestined? All of those big philosophical questions. And this symphony is a big commentary on those wanderings of our mind and soul as we grow up and mature. He was born into a Jewish family and went through a transformation. And I don't think he officially was baptized into a Christian faith, but became spiritually, I think, towards the end of his life, more Christian than Jewish. And this symphony is one of the manifestations of his beliefs. So this is on the philosophical side of the piece. On purely musical side, it's a magnificent piece of art and composition that requires a huge orchestra in order to give justice to the piece. That's why we couldn't just do it anytime. In order to make it happen, we need to join forces of two big symphony orchestras, one of our own in Lafayette, alongside Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra. So on that night, both orchestras will be playing together, side by side, probably over 130 musicians on stage. The biggest brass section you probably ever heard on the stage of Hyman, 10 horns, 6 trumpets, many trombones, tubas, huge percussion section. In addition to that, we're going to feature a small orchestra off stage, the special musical effects when you're hearing sounds coming from outside of the hall almost, sort of maybe sounds of a memory or dreamy sounds. Then we're going to have a joint choruses of the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra and Baton Rouge Symphony, over 130, 40 voices, and two outstanding solo vocalists singing important parts of the text. So it's really a beautiful combination of musical colors and sounds, and I like to often say that Mahler, in my mind, is a master of composing feelings. He writes music that has very strong emotional association with many different feelings. At least that's how I hear it, and many other people too. And he's capable of delivering the most subtle, delicate feelings and emotions in the most subtle musical colors and dynamics. On one hand, on the other hand, he can create the most magnificent, lush, sometimes bombastic sounds you will ever experience with live orchestra on stage. Something that you will never be able to hear using even the most advanced technology. You need to be in a room with 300 musicians singing and playing their hearts out to really experience the power of that music. And this additional layer that it's really very important, I think, and something I mentioned in Mahler's spirituality and his philosophical approach to life, is that the text that he is using is very, very meaningful. He uses some of his own poetry. He uses poetry of William Klopstock, who was a relatively little-known German poet, but wrote some very, very interesting poetry. And he also uses bits and pieces of this collection of old German songs and tales called Das Knaben Wunderhorn, which is something that Mahler used very often in many of his other compositions. He uses little themes of songs and little texts. But all of those three different resources, Das Knaben Wunderhorn, his own poetry and poetry of the Klopstock, they all talk about the same, about searching for answers, searching for destiny, and at the end, in this beautiful, magnificent finale, sort of saying a song of a praise of God and the belief that there is something for us beyond the place we are right now. So very meaningful, very significant work. But, you know, I don't think you have to be really deeply religious to appreciate it. You just need to open your heart and mind, and if there is just 2 grams of spirituality in any of us, those 2 grams will respond. Some of us have tons of that spirituality. Some of us has less, but I think this work speaks to everybody. Mm. And since it was first performed by Gustav Mahler himself about 100 to 120 years ago, it has been favorite on many concert stages, regardless of, you know, religious connotations of any particular place, because it's really a universal piece. It speaks universal language, and Mahler, being such a genius composer, at this particular symphony, he's like a little kid in the toy store. He has all the possible musical toys to his disposal, as big percussion and brass as he wants, huge body of strings, you know, four piccolos, four flutes, big choir. Sometimes he uses just the woman voices in a very delicate way. Sometimes he uses just the men voices in very solemn hymns. Mm-hmm. And then he puts them together in those beautiful, powerful selections. And then you have those soprano and mezzo-soprano singing those poetic lines. I can stop talking about it.
Well, for those of you who are just tuning in and becoming entranced by what you're hearing, my guest is Mariusz Smoly, conductor of the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra, talking about their next concert, which will feature one piece only, and that will be Mahler's Resurrection Symphony. Now, in your description of it, many of our listeners are probably more familiar with, in the way you're describing it, familiar with Beethoven's Ninth Symphony,
right,
which has choral in it. And how would you describe for those people who are not familiar with Mahler, what is the difference? What happened between the time Beethoven was writing that and this? Because you're describing some of the same emotions that are elicited in when we listen to the Ninth Symphony.
Very,
is this different?
Very good question. I would say that, in a very simple language, Mahler is a Beethoven on steroids. Everything Mahler does, in a way, is bigger. He has a bigger orchestra. As a composer, in a way, he has, if you compare composition to painting, he has more colors to his disposal. Maybe he's kind of almost in the 3D technology, something that Beethoven didn't have. And he's not bound by some of the classical strict restrictions about form that Beethoven was already pushing from. He really single-handedly brought music from the classical to romantic period, primarily by composing Beethoven, his Ninth Symphony. Mahler takes another step forward. He even makes the form more grandiose and doesn't stay in the strict forms of so-called Allegro Sonata. He's very freely going from one tonality to the other tonality. He puts two harps on stage that, you know, Beethoven never did in his symphony. He has a much larger percussion section, which also gets another colors to what he does. So he's pretty much, I think, following the same path that Beethoven started, which is making the symphonic work not just an instrumental form, but something bigger, adding a philosophical meaning, adding choir, adding a text, searching for new forms of expression, new colors, new emotions. And I think because he was a man of a late 19th century, early 20th century, I think he was also affected by the world around him. So Beethoven was writing in response to what he experienced as somebody who lived in Austria in early 19th century or late 18th century. Mahler is about 100 years later, and the world changed quite a bit during that time, especially in the Central Europe. Mahler also writes a little bit from the Jewish perspective, which also brings another angle. Now, in many of his works, we know that he was really struggling to find his identity. He grew up in this little town, what's today Czech Republic. At that time, was part of Austro-Hungarian Empire, and he was a religious minority. And he was strongly influenced by a military music, because next to the little inn, his father was an innkeeper, there was a huge military barracks. He was hearing this military music, and then he would go to synagogue, and he would hear Czech language, he would hear Polish language, he would hear gypsies coming through the town playing the gypsy music, and he was speaking German, but it wasn't really German, it was Austrian German, which was different. So he was this kind of man of the world, even though living in a little town in Czech Republic. Later on, of course, he moved to Vienna, spent most of his time in Vienna. Then he was also in the United States. He conducted New York Philharmonic in early 20th century. So he's really a man of the world in a very different sense than Beethoven was. And I think and his sounds and his concept and his music speaks to that fact.
Incredible. If that doesn't alone make people want to buy tickets. We're talking about his Resurrection Symphony, Mahler's Resurrection Symphony, which will be performed by the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra in collaboration with the Baton Rouge Symphony and their chorus as well. So huge. I don't know if there have ever been that many performers on stage.
No, I think it's our largest production, and in terms of classical music, or maybe any music, maybe the largest production Hyman ever ever seen in terms of professional presentation. I know they have a big dance recitals, and there may have been 300 kids dancing on the stage, which must be a wonderful experience too. But in terms of producing an artistic presentation along classical symphonic lines or even operatic lines, that's probably the largest one.
What an opportunity we have on March 16th 15, here. Sunday, March 15th?
Saturday, March 15th.
Okay. Saturday, March 15th will be the Resurrection Symphony at the Hyman Center in Lafayette. And for those of you who were not able to buy tickets for the Heartstrings concert tomorrow, you may want to slip those tickets in as a Valentine's present tomorrow.
I can think about more meaningful and really romantic date. I wish in a way I could...
Attend yourself.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to conducting it. For the last 20 years I wanted to conduct it. But on the other hand, I wish I could just sit in the audience and listen to it, because I did listen to it on few occasions live. I listened to many different recordings. But, you know, to experience it at the moment where it's happening, being in the same room where all those vibrations are happening and all this... huge gamut of colors and emotions is flowing. It's something that I can't possibly even begin to describe. You need to be there to experience that. And I hope many of our listeners will
have the opportunity that you won't.
Yes.
We'll be enjoying the fruits of your work on this particular piece, which you are so passionate about, obviously. Tickets for the Resurrection Symphony are available online.
Yes, they're all online. You can go to our website. You can go to Ticketmaster website. You can visit Hyman Bach's office. And please hurry, because we feel that there's very strong response from the community to the performance. And I'll be very happy to come in a month and say, well, how about the next concert, because we just sold the Hyman Center with the Resurrection Symphony, which is possible. But if you want good seats, please do it early.
And something to think about is this really is a regional performance, and there will be people coming from all over South Louisiana to this concert. So tickets are available now for the Resurrection Concert by the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra and friends, many, many friends. You can find out more about it on the website. And I know that you all have a fundraiser coming up, and I want to just briefly mention that, because that certainly helps you all in all of your efforts.
Yes, we have a wonderful woman's associated for many years with the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra, a wonderful group of women that are very dedicated to helping us raise funds primarily for our educational programs, and they have been very successful doing it for the last 20 years. Their main fundraiser is so-called Mad Hatter's Luncheon, and this will happen on Monday, March the 10th, at the City Club at River Ranch, starting about 11 o'clock. Wonderful group of people, great food. There's a fashion show, wonderful items to buy through silent auction and live auction. And you may have a great fun at the same time support the educational efforts of the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra.
Which are many.
Yes.
So you can find out more about that on their website as well. That's the Mad Hatters on March 10th and then the Resurrection Symphony on March 15th. Again, their website is acadianasymphony.org. Mariusz, thank you so much for coming by to tell us more about
Thank you very much.
Everything happening there. Mariusz Smoley, conductor of the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra. And now a look at what's happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. Opening this evening at Theater 810 in downtown Lafayette, a musical comedy review, kind of cabaret-style musical review called The Bumpy Road, A Journey Through Pregnancy, created by Sarah Gauthier and Allison Baron Brandon. They will be accompanied with live music by Adam Truard. Their performance will run through the weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings at 7:30, and on Sunday at 2 o'clock at Theater 810 at 810 Jefferson Street. Tickets are available by calling the theater or going to their Eventbrite site. That opens tonight, 7:30 at Theater 810. Opening in Crowley, the Teen Acadia Players present Ladies Sigh No More by Thomas Hishak at the Acadia Center for the Arts and Culture in Crowley. Tickets available on their website or by calling the theater. And tomorrow morning, there will be a reading by Ruth Behar. She was originally scheduled to read this afternoon in Dupre Library, but the Atlanta airport was snowed in and she has been delayed. So she will be giving a public reading tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock in Griffin Hall in room 315. So if you're hoping to hear her read, that's 10 o'clock tomorrow. Griffin Hall, room 315. All are invited to attend that reading. And tomorrow evening, continuing at Cité des Arts, the play Visiting Mr. Green by Jeff Barron. It's a co-production of Gris Gris Productions and the Tea Sippers Theater Group, directed by Bruce Cohn and starring Vincent Barra and Andrew Lee Vincent. And the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra's Heartstrings Concert has been sold out. If you're thinking of calling for a ticket, that is sold out, but they do have tickets for future concerts that you can get now. Open auditions for the Tea Sipper Theater Company's production of Into the Woods will be held tomorrow and Saturday, 1 to 6 p.m. at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. For more information, you can stop by the Tea Sippers Facebook page or call the Acadiana Symphony for the Arts. On Valentine's night, there will be a poetry reading in New Iberia at the A&E Gallery. Featured poets are Bonnie McDonald and Claire Martin, and there will be an open mic session after those two readings. So bring your favorite piece of love poetry, prose, I think, or a little bit of theater, something to share during the open mic. On Sunday, there will be a showing of Les Blank's film Spend It All, a documentary of South Louisiana from 1971. It's free and open to everyone, 3 o'clock this coming Sunday in Oliver Hall on the UL campus. That's the Computer Science Building. This is a part of the five-part series led by Dr. Barry Osley on images of South Louisiana in film. There will be a discussion before and after the film on representations of South Louisiana in film. This is sponsored by the Friends of the Humanities and the College of Liberal Arts at UL Lafayette. Again, that is Les Blank's Spend It All from 1971. And continuing in Dupre Library, if you're able to come on campus, several exhibits on display featuring Mardi Gras, both the urban Mardi Gras and the country Mardi Gras. Those are in glass cases up and down the hallway. And for a listing of programs on KRVS, please stop by our website, krvs.org, clicking on the schedule button and downloading a weekly schedule. You can also take a look at our events button, and there many people list events that are happening in town, and you can click on that and see what people have posted on the events button. And just to add to that, one event this coming Sunday, the Vermilionville Courier de Mardi Gras, which is Sunday from 10 until 4 o'clock. Stay with KRVS this afternoon and evening. We're with NPR's All Things Considered from 4 until 6. From 6 to 7, Terry Gross hosts Fresh Air. At 7, it's This American Life. At 8 o'clock, it's From the Shamrock Shore. At 9, Franco Mix. And at 10, Earthbeat. At 11, La Vionera. In just a moment, we join NPR's All Things Considered.